Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us this evening. Would you please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It's nice to see a full house. Welcome. We will call our village board meeting for June 25th to order. Roll call, Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Genrick.
Here.
Trustee Atwood.
Here.
President Rafter here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Sampson.
Here.
All present and accounted for. Do I have a motion to modify or adopt the agenda as presented?
Move to approve as presented.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Trustee Green. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Announcements. This coming Saturday, June 9th, there is going to be a run called the Bellin Run. It has been running for many, many years. And part of it is going to go through Alloway. The Saturday, June 2nd, there was a party. Now, June 9th, it's going to be 73, slightly cloudy, but the roads through Alloway that will be closed are Webster Avenue from 7:45 to 10, and then pretty much Green Avenue, East River, St. Joseph, Leibold, Baird, Garland, Irwin, Hastings, and South Clay from pretty much 8 o'clock until 11 o'clock. So plan accordingly, and come out and have fun. It's a great, great community event. Sunday, June 10th at Green Isle Park is Alloway Fest. It is a great event. It has a car show, people coming out, music, just a great community event from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The Alloway Optimist Club puts this on. It's the 33rd annual. Food and refreshments, huge bounce house, kids games, remote car demo, and live DJ, free admission for spectators, $2 donation suggested at the gate. All proceeds support the youth activities, and for your forecast, it's going to be 74 and partly cloudy, so come on up. And then, on Friday, June 8th, at Green Isle Park, Baseball Diamond, there is going to be the showing of Moana, sponsored by the Alloway Lions Club, and Zesty's Frozen Custard. Come by early as our Alloway summer camp staff will be running some fun children's crafts and games prior to the movie. The activities start at 7 and the movie starts at dusk. If you want to know what the weather is going to be, it's going to be 75 and cloudy. My contribution to tonight's event. For those of you in attendance, a copy of the petition that the village is passing around to ask the governor and our state representatives to consider closing Green Bay Correctional Institution is out there for your signature, a description of the reasons why some folks feel that should happen. We appreciate your support. We're also going to enlist a group of residents, if you are interested in helping go door-to-door in your neighborhood or to collect signatures, please contact Brad Lang at the village, and he will be more than happy to get you a copy of the petition and help us get the word out. Thank you. There is an update on the Safe Routes to School project.
Okay, Under the Webster Elementary Safe Route to School project, new sidewalk will be constructed starting in the middle of this month. New walk will be constructed along Woodrow Way and Brook Ridge Street from Alloway Ave to Leibold Street, and then along St. Joseph Street from Leibold West to just short of Webster Avenue. There'll be a short segment of sidewalk that will be constructed along the east side of Leibold, just south of Beaupre Street. Right now, Number of utilities are out relocating utilities that cleared a way for the construction of a new sidewalk. Like I mentioned before, the project is anticipated to start in the middle of this month and be completed before school starts in September.
Great, thank you. Any other announcements from board members? Any other announcements from staff? Hearing none, we will move on to agenda item number 4, public appearances. Is there anyone in the audience this evening who would like to speak on something that is not on this evening's agenda?
Jim O'Rourke. Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue, I'm the former co-chairman of the Village of Alloway Bike Path Committee. You mentioned the petition that's going to be going around to close and redevelop the prison, the reformatory. I think that's a good idea, but there are two different owners of that parcel, and the prison will probably take at least 5, if not 10 years to redevelop. And I'd like to see the village move forward with the redevelopment of the DNR property, which is the actual prime riverfront property, 14 acres. We already have a settling pond there. We have a trail going in next year there, and it's going to connect to the Fox River Trail. So there's 14 acres there. It's ready to develop immediately. Plan should be put in place this year so they can break ground next year. So I'm asking the village board to petition the DNR to sell the village or a private developer the remaining 10 acres of that land and get started with the project right away instead of waiting till the prison project goes forward. So you could fast track it, get ahead of the book game 5 years in advance, and you'd have 5 years more of tax revenue if you move forward with redeveloping the DNR property with the settling pond across the street from the prison. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak tonight on something that's not on this evening's agenda? Hearing none, we will move on to agenda item number 5, public.
Jim, hold on one second. I think this gentleman.
Well, it's on the agenda.
Which agenda item is it, sir?
17.
Okay, are you going to stay for the meeting?
I can.
Okay, we'll open it up at that time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes. Is this on something that's not on this evening's agenda?
Yes.
Okay. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Nice to see you too.
Could you give us your name and address, please?
Deborah Lynn, 151 Hoffman Road.
Thank you.
I remember when we had our meeting, when we changed the bus routes and they started coming down Hoffman. We have semis coming down Hoffman. This is Alloway. This is our home for a long time. Why do we have to have semis coming down Hoffman Road?
Okay.
That's the only thing I want to bring up.
Okay. We'll ask staff to take a look at that. And
thank
if
you.
You'd like to give drop off your name and phone number or email, they'll be happy to get back to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Deb. Okay. We will move on to agenda item number 5, public hearing to consider approval of a conditional use request from Jeff Matsky to allow for a mix of uses in an existing building at 1317 South Webster Avenue, parcel number AL-864. Would anyone like to speak on this matter from the public regarding the public hearing? In support or not? We received one communication from Clarence Matuzak, a village resident, who is in support of this. Is there anyone else? Going once, going twice. The public hearing is closed. Action item number 6, conditional use request for 1317 South Webster Avenue. Do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Green.
I would move to grant the conditional use.
Thank you.
I would second.
Seconded by Trustee Dart. Any discussion?
Is the commercial use stained glass business? Is that what I'm hearing? Or
it is a
stained. And would it be retail?
Excuse me. Is it going to be retail, Trevor?
It's primarily going to be like a hobby type use. Yeah. No set retail hours.
Okay. And does the petitioner currently own the property?
The petitioner currently owns property. He is selling. So.
Well, he is selling?
Correct. I believe the sale is conditioned on receiving the conditional approval.
Okay.
And that has historically been kind of a mixed use anyway, with a dance studio and whatever else, right?
That's correct, yes.
And several of those businesses are mixed.
Okay.
Near there.
Okay, so the main level is going to be a woodworking and stained glass workplace studio, and the second floor will be owner-occupied. Very creative use of the property. Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action item number 7, Hillcrest Homes PDD for Havenway Condos expires, and the request for an extension. Mr. Lane.
We do have Mark Mockel here representing Hillcrest, just so you know. If you recall, a year ago, this was brought to the board, roughly a year ago, and an extension was asked for 12 months. And primarily it was due to the passing of Harry Mockel and the estate being tied up. Been in contact with Mark and talking about the process to move it forward. And at this time, obviously as the deadline approached, they're not yet in a position to move it forward. Attorney Gass has been in contact with Hillcrest attorney, and I think I'll turn it over to Nancy and expand a little bit more.
Very good, thank you.
Yeah, I think the last time that this came before the board, after Harry's passing, there was some issues about the estate, who would ultimately own or wind up with this particular development coming out of the estate and out of the probate. I did receive a letter from Hillcrest attorney Thomas Rohan from Davidson Keelbaugh, essentially requesting a 2-year extension of the PDD. Principally, or one of the primary reasons, is because there are some complex issues involving the estate, and it's not closed yet and isn't going to be probably for the foreseeable future. So the estate has to kind of close itself out to figure out who's going to take over that development, whether it be somebody internal within the Mako family or some subsidiary of the Mako family, or whether they'll ultimately put it up for sale to a third party to develop the parcel. So we're seeking an extension to let the dust settle from the estate to figure out what direction ownership is going to go. And once that's determined via the estate, to determine what direction the project is going to go once ownership is clarified through the probate and, you know, process.
Okay. Just to be clear, it's for the property right over here, right?
Right.
Okay. Do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Green.
Move to extend the PDD 1 year.
Okay, NEPA 2 as requested.
I would only do the one and then get an update, and then we can always do the next one.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Trustee Genrick, any discussion? Did Mark want to say something? Or?
I think he did a great job with it. I appreciate that.
Okay. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Well, it's been going on a really long time.
It has been.
And 2005, right? 13 years. So hopefully another 2 years might make a difference, but it just seems to keep going on. So.
Well,
but I don't see what else we can do. So.
Well, and Last year when we had, or last time it was up for renewal and we had questions and we needed help, the Mako family stepped up and made those changes that we asked. So,
that's true.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action item number 8, Ordinance 2018-07, Code 163-2, Registration of Bicycles. We are being asked to change the current ordinance regarding bicycle licensing in the village. Trevor, do you want to fill us in on the proposed changes, or do you?
There's been an update since that one was drafted. I think
okay.
I emailed it to you. There's also
yeah.
a copy in front of you. Some information that was originally left in could be removed as well. So
okay.
We no longer have a fee. License are optional. So it's pretty basic.
Okay. And last time when we were talking about this, I thought if we're not going to force people to license bicycles, why should we even have an ordinance? But the ordinance speaks to more of that, on how bicycles can be used in the village and for safety reasons and that sort of thing. For the people in the audience, the village used to require that a bike be registered in the village of Alloway, and we are saying we now offer that as a service, but we are not making that mandatory. It does make sense from a safety perspective because many bicycles, if you want your bicycle to be found and retrieved by the police, the best way is to have it registered with the village. And that's pretty much what the changes were, to take those requirements out and make it optional and to encourage people to do so. So do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Genrich.
I would move to approve as presented.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Trustee Sampson. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action number 9, regarding compression breaks. When and at what time are they permitted? This was brought to the board by Trustee Atwood. And Mr. Lang contacted the Department of Transportation. And their reply was, the department has a policy on the use and location of compression brake signing. In accordance with the policy, the department does not permit compression brake signs on freeway or expressway highways. And 172 is an expressway. And then also, they added, only the standard engine brake muffler's required sign may be used on highways under state maintenance responsibility. And those signs may be installed only on conventional highways at or near corporate limits of the community. The sign shall not be used on freeways, expressways, interchange ramps, or site-specific locations of conventional highways. So 172 is not a conventional highway.
I guess not.
And so we are not allowed to have a sign there. Is that a pretty good summary? And if we don't like their answer, we can petition them to change it.
Okay. I'm putting a cardboard one up.
The complaint from Trustee Atwood was it's loud right along 172 for the residential neighborhoods when truckers are compression braking in the middle of the night. So we're simply asking to have those restrictions put on. But for now, the answer is no. Sorry, Trustee. Yep. Action item number 10, condemned pump house on Green Avenue. Kevin, or Brad, or whoever wants to speak.
So, continuation on from last month, as stated, the building is condemned. So I was asking you guys to make a decision on which way to move forward, as far as
either repairing the roof or raising the building. Speaking with people that I know in the trades, the roof repair would be pretty extensive. Plus, with it being a commercial building, it would need state review and engineering or designing for that roof structure. So that would add to the cost. So due to the price of the repair, it would probably have to go out for bids because it is a public building. So I guess I just want to know from your aspect which way us as a village wants to move forward with it.
Did anyone provide any kind of a ballpark, or do you have a guesstimate on what the cost of repairing that roof would be?
A ballpark would be about $30,000.
And do you have any information on what raising that building would cost?
Not currently. From what I was aware of, back when they stopped using the building through the water department, they had estimates of $60,000. But that was 15 years ago. So prices have increased.
What was the cost of raising the Province Shaw property?
The total bill came to about $85,000.
There's a lot of cement in this building.
Yeah. So that raising would also include the water tanks and everything?
Yes.
And just making it a green field? Okay. What are our options as they are regarding what would we, if we chose to raise the building, what would we have to do from a historical perspective?
I believe through the power of the building inspector, from what the state gives me the ability to do, it's got to be brought to the attention of the Historical Society, and they have to, I believe, make determination if they want to try to salvage it. Otherwise, I have the right to order a building to get torn down anytime.
Trustee Harris?
And I know you just had a ballpark figure of the $30,000. That would just allow it to not be condemned. It's not going to repair or enhance any of the inside. It would just allow it to not be in a condemned status. Is that accurate?
I condemned the building because it was unsafe. So if the roof was repaired, it would be a safe structure, so I could take the condemned sticker off of it. As far as being used, it would still be condemned as far as usability, because there's no water, there's no power, there's no heat. So.
Okay, let me rephrase that. It would, in essence, be in a similar state to where it was prior to the April snowstorm.
Right.
Okay, that's... Yep. I should have asked it differently. Thank you.
Mr. Lane.
We did receive an offer today on the building. However, because it wasn't on the agenda, that will come back to the board on the June 19th meeting.
Okay. How much does it cost to get an estimate? And if we put it out to bid, what's the cost to the village to do that?
Estimates are free, usually.
So it's just our labor putting it out to bid?
Right.
For removal, or what's your question?
My question was, if we wanted to get bids on fixing the roof, well, how much does that process cost the village? Someone's basement could show. I don't know. Okay, any other questions for staff? Uh, I will make a motion, seeing that we have a proposal to purchase the property, and we can't discuss this.
Yes, you can.
Jason? Because it's not on this evening's agenda, I would propose that we postpone discussion until we have a chance to take a look at the offer. And in the meantime, are estimates free for raising, to figure out how much it would cost to raise the building?
Usually any estimate is free of charge. Okay. So
I would then suggest that we try to get an estimate for raising the building, consider the proposal to purchase, and come back and make a decision. When do we have to take action by from your direction?
I believe last meeting I gave you 3 months. It should give us enough time to collect information on bids.
Okay.
Is it realistic? Assuming the timing works, I would second that motion. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if we would have enough time to request and receive bids on both repair and raising. Because I know we want to make sure we have all of our options addressed, but it may not happen that we get that done within 2 weeks from today.
Right.
Yeah.
So it may not be realistic to have it happen at the next agenda, and I believe that was part of your motion.
It was.
I could see the roof repair estimates coming in a lot faster than a demo. Yeah.
Okay. The repair estimates would come in quicker?
I believe so.
Even if you go out to bid? Or can you just get a ballpark?
I think we just go and get ballpark numbers.
Okay.
If we go out to bid, we're going to have to put together plans and specs.
And we should do that if we know we're going to do that.
Yeah, right. We can go out and talk to a number of contractors and invite them to come over and we can bring in a number of contractors that may be interested in raising that building, talk to them separately, and Kevin can bring in some contractors to talk about the roof, and we can get a number of cost estimates.
I would think those are the three things I would like to have for making the decision. How much will it cost to raise, how much will it cost to fix, and what's the offer to purchase? So,
and you have legal counsel here. Does that fit with the plan?
Well, it seems like a wise course of action that way. Those are the three options. Fix the roof and make it in a non-condemnable state. Raise the building because it is condemned and you don't want to fix it. Or consider the offer and figure out how you want to proceed with that, because, of course, that would have to have, I would think, some strict guidelines in terms of a counteroffer prospectively, in terms of what the village would expect to be done and what it would expect to be done by, if this person is going to fix the building and put it in a condition where it's not in a condemned state and would be operational. So those are the three options, and I think it's wise for the board to get the necessary information to consider all three options and figure out the best course of action going forward.
Okay, thank you. So we have a motion on the table to do just that. Do I have a second?
We have a second.
Oh, Trustee Harris.
With one minor adjustment, is that we don't limit ourselves to discussing it on at the June 19th meeting if we don't have all the information.
Okay. It's okay. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Action item number 11, auditor's report. Julie.
Virginia Hins is here from Shank to present the auditor's report.
Hello, Virginia.
You can call me Jane.
Thank you for joining us. Could you state your name and address, please, just for the record?
My address, too.
Yes.
Virginia
business. For business.
Fredo, Wisconsin. Do you have a copy of the audit report with you?
Yes,
all right,
ma'am.
Just want to make sure.
So we performed the 2017 audit, and it's performed in accordance with governmental auditing standards. And I'm not going to go through everything in this booklet. We're just going to go through the highlights in the management communication document. But in this booklet, the bottom booklet is the auditor's opinion, and you did receive an unmodified opinion, which is the best opinion, meaning that all the financial information presented in the report is materially stated. We had few audit adjustments. Julie does a great job, as you know. So the numbers are materially correct, and we received an unmodified opinion. We also perform an audit of the internal control and compliance with state statutes, and we found no instances of non-compliance with state statutes, and there were no internal control deficiencies, so a good clean audit. Then if you want to open up the management communication document, and we're just going to, this goes over highlights of some of the numbers that are in the audit report. So on page 5 is a summary of the governmental fund balances, and there's really, the general fund is where I'm going to focus. Your unassigned fund balance, that's the available funds. So you do have a 30% minimum fund balance policy. You want to maintain that minimum fund balance for cash flow purposes for the first part of the year because of the lag in some of your revenues, major revenue sources like your tax revenues. A lot of them come in July. Some of your state aids, you don't receive your shared revenues until November, the majority of them. So that's why, those are one of the reasons why you would maintain a minimum fund balance policy. The minimum fund balance policy is about $2.1 million. And if you look at the unassigned fund balance in the 12/31/2017 column, you can see that your unassigned fund balance for 12/31/2017 is around $2.9 million, so you're well in excess of that minimum fund balance policy. So the village is in excellent financial condition. We also just wanted to note, there's a sentence in the second to last paragraph, that if you do apply any fund balance to balance future budgets, we recommend that you continue to just use that for like one-time projects, not for operating expenditures. Then on page 6, it just shows a summary in graph form of your unassigned fund balance historically, that you have maintained your minimum fund balance policy, I can't say that today, of around $2.1 million. You've been in excess of that since 2013. On page 7 is your tax incremental district. The tax incremental district has a very healthy fund balance of about $500,000. So you have no debt in your TID, and you have that money to use for your future expenditures. And if you have any major expenditures, you can issue debt and use the increments, of course, to fund that. But I just wanted to highlight that you have a healthy fund balance in your TID. On page 8, I'm going to 8, 9, and 10 are your utilities. The sewer utility. The sewer utility has generated about $543,000 in 2017, and that, with assessments collected, have generated enough cash to cover your debt service requirements. So the sewer utility rates are adequate at this time. We recommend that every year, which we usually do at the audit, and I know that your employees also monitor this, but the sewer utility rates are adequate at this time. Then the water utility is on page 9. The water utility on page 9, if you look down in the section which shows the graph for the authorized rate of return, that is the rate of return that is in your Public Service Commission last rate case that you did. So the authorized rate of return was about 6.25%, and you can see that your rate of return is actually below that. But I wouldn't focus on that. We usually look at cash flow. The water utility did generate adequate cash flows to fund its operating expenses and debt service requirements. So we do not see a need at this time to increase water rates. We feel the rates are adequate. Then on page 10, your stormwater utility. The stormwater utility generated in 2017 about $291,000 cash from operating activities. We usually like to see that covering your debt service requirements. Your debt service requirement for 2017 was $306,000. So you're really close on your stormwater utility. So you can see in the paragraph, we do have a note that you monitor this to make sure you are generating enough cash in your stormwater utility. So I would review that to make sure, I'm sure you looked at the budget for 18 just to make sure you have that adequate cash flow. I think the stormwater utility does have about $250,000 at the end of the year cash on hand. But if you keep using each year, of course, that's going to dip into that balance. So just continue to monitor those rates. Did you have any questions about the audit report?
I don't. Trustee Harris. Just
in a general sense throughout municipalities throughout Wisconsin, is the 30% level in terms of unassigned balance what you typically see, or what do you typically see throughout Wisconsin?
I've seen anywhere from 15 to 30 is typical. It would depend on each municipality because the state shared revenues vary and the property tax collections vary. So I think you definitely have to look at it from your individual municipal needs and the cash flow needs and adjust it if needed. If you think it's too much or not enough, you could make it 40. Some municipalities might need 40. A smaller village, you know, that's not generating that much in taxes might need a higher fund balance policy, and some larger municipalities might need a lower fund balance policy.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? We thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
And I would just like to say that the village is in great shape and great part because of the folks sitting at that table. Our staff works extremely hard to keep to do more with less and keep things as flat as we can, but while providing some of the greatest services, I think, in the greater Green Bay area. So thank you very much to the staff. Could I have a motion to accept and place the auditor's report on file? Trustee Dirt. Seconded by Trustee Green. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action item number 12. Action regarding noise variance permit for Riviera Bar and Grill at 2150 Riverside Drive to allow music in their parking lot on Sundays from 2 to 6. Do I have a motion on this?
I'd move to approve.
Trustee Atwood, seconded by Trustee Green. Any discussion?
Oh, one question.
Yes.
If we do this year, that doesn't necessarily mean it would work for next year, correct?
License are good for 1 year.
Okay. Just in case that there's any issues with the neighborhood or with the music on Sundays.
And I would just ask that on the application, it be changed. It doesn't show Sundays. It just says May through November, 2 through 6 p.m.
Okay.
So if we're just approving that on Sundays, I'd like that to say that. And for those of you in the audience, Riviera Bar and Grill wants to have music out on their patio that they just constructed and their deck Sunday afternoons. So come on, go on down and enjoy the beautiful weather and the fox. Thank you. So, do I have a motion on this item?
I move to approve.
Oh, we do have a motion. And a second?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action number 13, action regarding preliminary approval of PDD to construct a restaurant and brewery on parcel AL-44 located at 1649 South Webster Avenue. Does someone want to talk on that? Brad or Trip?
Mm-hmm.
So as you mentioned, this is the proposed brewery and restaurant project for the old Village Hall property. This came before the village last year as just a brewery. Since that time, there has been the addition of the 5,000 square foot restaurant, as shown on, I think, the third page of your plans. The conceptual plans have been reviewed by staff. There's no major comments or concerns at this time. Right now, this is preliminary review, so we're looking at conceptually if this makes sense for the village. During the final review period, we'll be looking at more detailed plans, parking numbers, etc. And we can discuss that at that time. Plan Commission reviewed it at their May 21st meeting. They did have a few comments and concerns. I think for the most part, those can be addressed either tonight or at a future meeting. Some of the concerns were hours of operation, and we do have representatives from the development here tonight that can speak on that. Others was parking, stormwater. Those will likely be worked out further on in the review process. And another comment that was made at the Plan Commission meeting was the remnant parcel. If you recall, originally there's three parcels up on Webster Avenue, and last year we did combine two of them, and the brewery and restaurant will locate on that majority portion. There is a remnant parcel, 1677 South Webster. There is a proposed project that I think the board will be discussing later tonight, but anything at that site will also have to go through proper zoning and plan approval process as well. So. I'm sorry, one more thing. I did receive a phone call this afternoon from Huntington Bank, the property owners to the north of this property. They do have just a few concerns that I think we were able to work through with the developer. One was a concern with landscaping and the restaurant brewery sign blocking their own sign. I think that's something that can be mitigated. And then there's another concern with overflow parking into their property. So that's something that we'll have to discuss with the developer.
Okay. And when will it come back to the Planning Commission? And then back to the board?
Assuming approval tonight, it will go before the Planning Commission, and assuming all the details can be put together, June 25th would be the Planning Commission meeting. There's then a public hearing process. I think that would put us to the second meeting in July. I think that's July 17th, somewhere around there.
Thank you. So we're being asked to provide preliminary approval for this project based on the information we have.
Great.
Okay. I will entertain a motion.
I would move to approve. I was able to reserve the comments, so I'll make the motion to approve.
Okay. Do I have a second? Trustee Green. Any discussion?
I was able to attend the Planning Commission meeting, and the presenters did a great job of responding to questions and providing additional information, and I think it's going to be a great project. So.
Thank you. Any other? Trustee Green.
And I just want to start off by saying I'm wholly in support of this. The green space, though, concerns me. We've got a history of not letting green space go down. I mean, people in our village really do value that. So I would just say take a second look at that and see what we can't do, because this is preliminary, but that, in I see a fence along the back to protect the residents from headlights that are going straight back through there. So I love that in the landscaping that's going back there, but just consider the others too.
Trustee Sampson.
question from a newcomer to the board and really first exposure to this project. Has traffic on Webster, I see on the plan that there's a lot of reference to pedestrian traffic, and that's really not a friendly area. Traffic lights or ways to get, if this really takes off and is popular and you've got a couple other businesses across the street or in that area, is now when that would get addressed, or do we wait until the thing develops a few years and then deal with it then?
That is something that we are taking a look at currently. Last year we did begin conceptual review of a reconstruction of Webster Avenue. The date of that is uncertain. We'd like for it to be sooner rather than later, but there are a lot of factors that come into play. Specifically, we have to work within the county road reconstruction schedule, I guess. But it is something we're certainly looking at. I believe the developer, the architect, has included some space should we require any property acquisition for that property to allow for a sidewalk with the terrace, so that the sidewalk wouldn't be directly onto Webster Avenue, which would make it feel safer for the pedestrians. You'd allow for a more level sidewalk versus every driveway you have that little dip there, and it'd also allow for a space for snow storage as well. So I hope I answered your question, but that is something we're looking at, but in time, a schedule, we don't have a definitive answer on.
And Trustee Sampson, we also, we had an engineering design done, a streetscape done for that section of Webster, and to make sure that we have enough pedestrian right away and all of that. So it is in the plans. So, but that was prior to you joining our board. So thank you for the question. Trustee Green.
So you brought up a good point. Where is snow going to go here? And the reason I bring this up is a prior PDD, that snow removal company, has killed a substantial part of their landscaping because there was nowhere to put snow. So Trevor, were there any thought as to where snow is going to go through here? Because it is tight without a lot of greens, as much green space as we typically would like. So,
I would probably defer that question to the developer. They might be able to have more operational plans, know operational plans better than I. But I believe initially, I think it was going to go in the southeast corner. There's, I think, the stormwater location there.
So it'd get pushed into the stormwater pond?
Correct.
Okay.
I believe, and Mike's shaking his head yes, so.
Okay, well, it's just because there's trash cans and then there's parking spots through there. So just so there's enough room to go with it, because we do have one PDD that, anyway, you know which one I'm talking about. Their landscaping looks like not good.
Okay, thank you. Is it
good? Yeah, we're good.
Trustee Harris?
excuse me. Second Trustee Green's comments about the green space, because I think from where we had been to where we are now, we're pretty much on the limit of what our expectations are with an 80-20 split. So I don't know. We'll make sure we pay attention to that as we go forward. I don't know if the possible, in the notes from Dimension 4, talk about a fourfold expansion of the brewery itself and where that might go, and if that starts to impede on the green space that we have. I know it would have to go through the process just like this is going through the process. So one of the other things that may be an option is a porous asphalt, which allows for the stormwater to get absorbed into the ground. Don't know if that's an option or not, but it's something I thought I'd at least throw out there.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Eli?
Sorry. I was just going to, because this flows downhill, and we have had issues where when snow gets pushed from businesses, it then flows and it's been flowing into residents. We had it happen with the Purveya construction, and we've had it happen some other times. So I would just be cognizant that we don't overfill this pond with snow either. So that needs to be taken into consideration. and making sure it doesn't go down that hill to that residence on Rustic Oaks.
Some of my comments are at the last meeting, or at the Planning Commission meeting, I think. Someone was concerned about the garbage, so especially with the restaurants, so how are we going to contain, how often are they going to pick up the garbage, how are we going to make sure that the smell is contained and it's a clean environment and not affecting the people back on Rustic Oaks. And then I'm interested to see, it says, though rendering is not updated, it captures the intention of the project. When do we actually get to see the intention of the project, or the project?
I would assume that would be at the next meeting, the next round of meeting.
Okay. Any other discussion? We have a request from the floor to suspend the rules. Do I have a motion? Trustee Dart, seconded by Trustee Green. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Who'd like to speak on this issue? Sir? Start in the back. Good evening.
Good evening, sir, and board. My name is John Shalai, and I'm at 1609 Rustic Oaks. And I was here at the last Planning Commission meeting. We did look at it, and it was on our screen there. A couple questions or comments I had. I think it's good that we got something going there. I think it would be good to have that land used. So I'm not in disagreement of that. What we saw last time, though, was about 3 weeks ago or 2.5 weeks ago, was there were the three parcels, of which only two of them were being used or consumed in this purchase, which left about a 60-foot frontage on that street. And talking to my attorney on that issue, and then, of course, the detention area, they put all the detention, the water detention, was all pushed onto that public parcel that would be owned by the village of Alloway, which also reduces the size of that parcel for future development, makes it less attractive. I believe the developer said they would be willing to consider putting the detention for their project on their land so that the taxpayers aren't picking up the cost on that vacant parcel, and then the new buyer, whoever would be buying that, would have to provide for their own water detention. So I would appreciate the Planning Commission, whoever's working with the developers and with the board here, to have some consideration put in there for that. The other issue was the restaurant was brand new as of a couple weeks ago, and we asked what kind of a restaurant. We really didn't get much of a commitment on that other than it would be a family restaurant. In talking to the people involved, the restaurant's being built on speculation for being rented, which would be owned by a developer and then rented over periods of time, which, needless to say, you can see restaurants could change hands, the business could change hands, the hours could change hands. So I was hoping that with it being a PD, that the board would consider some restrictions on hours of operation. I have another parcel of land in that street that is contiguous to this parcel, which would be backing up to the city's land where the detention pond is if it's not incorporated in this development. The proposal last year when I was here was that they would put vegetation along that property line, but not a solid impervious partition, which means we could have a lot of lights and other reflections into the residential neighborhood, which is at the contiguous lot line. And if you could consider that, we'd appreciate that. I believe, as I said, it would be much more to the benefit of the community to have all that land consumed at one time rather than leaving it. Being in the development business myself, 60 feet is not a lot of land to develop. I didn't take the time to confirm to confirm parking, but I believe there's only 83 parking stalls on this property for now a restaurant, which is 5,000 square feet, which could be 140 seats, and the brewery. So I'm just concerned about that. I know there was a conversation about the snow being a place to put the snow. Excuse me. And I think that becomes an issue that you should consider quite a bit, especially if they're going to push it over by your vacant parcel there, which would be where the detention pond is, The purpose of that would be then you got all that salt and all that runoff going in there, which if you look at most of your detention ponds, unless they're activated some way, become nothing but a bunch of weeds and look pretty trashy over a period of time. That's what you're probably going to expect to see in the future. So those are some of our concerns there in that neighborhood and things that I would like to see at least the Plan Commission in the future planning process look at developing. And then we did talk about more specifically the aesthetics of the building, which up to what we have right now is not very conducive to telling what it's going to look like and does it comply with the aesthetics of the area there. So that's another concern we want to at least have addressed. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for your thoughtful thoughts. Mr. O'Rourke.
I'm O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'm the former co-chairman of the Village of Illinois Bike Fed Committee. I think it's a great project. I don't think it's ambitious enough. I think that this is coming through the Village Board as a PDD, Plan Development District, for the purpose of getting around the zoning code, specifically the stormwater detention pond and the parking requirements. The site is big enough for stormwater and for plenty of parking. The village should simply give the developer the land and let him develop it the best way possible without trying to shoehorn in the stormwater pond onto the other site. The way it sits, it's proposed right now, this is a simple zoning issue. It's not a PDD, it's a simple zoning issue, and there's not enough parking and there's not enough stormwater detention. If you're going to make a PDD, you have to do something special, you have to make it better than it would be under normal zoning, and the way that you can do that is give the developer the land at no cost, and we'll make it back on the increased taxes, because that land will sit there vacant if you take away all the, if you take away the parking and the stormwater pond. So it's not lawful to use the PDD process, Plan Development District process, to circumvent the zoning code. Your village attorney will tell you that. That's what's going on here. So you really need to make sure that you make it a full PDD, use the entire project, and make it something really good. It's a good project, but there's not enough parking, and the stormwater pond is not on the site. It's on public property right now, and then it needs to be addressed. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this item tonight?
Good evening. My name is Dan Rorty. I'm an architect with Dimension 4 and working with the developer, Deliris Construction, and the owners, the Malcolms. Can touch base on a couple of the questions that have come up. The PDD, and correct me if I'm wrong, we forget the brewery itself is an F building, a factory building, and that, I think, is what is causing the PDD consideration here. Wasn't that the thing that drove it into the PDD, was the factory aspect of the brewery itself?
If you just...
Okay. With that, in balancing green space and parking and the stormwater management, at this point, I think there's confidence that the Village of Alloway Planning Department, the Plan Commission, and the developer are working toward a solution that provides the most viable consolidation of that area for those types of services, parking, green space, stormwater drainage, and the like, as well as maximizing the development potential for the Village of Alloway's tax base. I have confidence in that, and I know there's questions about it. Until it's all unfolded, though, I think it is certainly something to continue to ask about to be sure it stays in the forefront. In terms of the building aesthetics, they're unchanged from what you agreed to for the brewery itself. And the elevation here is the colored rendered one. The hand, line drawing in the set, though, you'll see, does show you the front of the building for the restaurant. And it simply carries the same materials over to the restaurant. So where here you see the stone and glass for the tap room, and then to the right of that, the brewery itself has different materials. The restaurant, which will be to the left, will carry the stone, but will reduce the glass slightly and increase the stone to differentiate it from the brewery tap room, but while also providing that opportunity to enhance the street front with a palette of materials that the Village of Alloway has found favorable in the past. In terms of the expansion, that's still a carryover from where things originally started. If the expansion would go forward, it allows the brewery to stay put, and that's why it's kind of there. But we don't want to work Brad too hard. He's already said that this is quite a bit of brewery right now, and there are different ways to expand. Part of the number comes in how you handle the tanks and so forth and the size of those tanks. So by making the building slightly taller and by providing floor space already within the building, he can more than double capacity right within the building without expanding the footprint. The other thing that comes into play for that type of expansion in terms of what it can be includes multiple shifts and so forth. Now that's real ambitious, and Brad and Abby now have retired and they're at the San Juan Islands, but it is something that has all been considered as part of the whole planning process and what's going on. And their kids are running the brewery now. At 17, that's a little unusual, but that's, no, just kidding. The fence and lights for Mr. Shaleen, the intent is to try to keep the vegetation there. My concern, more so than even the owner's, is that that vegetation is going to change. And that's why we've been talking about a fence within that area. My concern is that the vegetation, which is what the neighbors support, may not be as attractive in the winter as they remember it in the summer. And so the owner, the Malcolms and the developer, are both going to be diligent in seeing that the best possible solution is there as well. I think those are some of the highlights of what I was hearing. I don't know if there's any other questions for this right now.
The only question I have is regarding the signage. We see a Zambaldi sign, and it's the whole footprint. What's the sign going to look like with the restaurant, or will they be two separate signs?
That's not been discussed specifically, although if there is a monument sign, it's possible that they would share the monument sign. However, building signs would be separated. So Zambaldi's would still maintain their own identity on their building, their portion of the building, and we'd envision the restaurant doing something the same on the front side, perhaps, which is over those windows. But the monument sign, that's still got to be worked out between the restaurant here and the Malcolms.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, sir.
Okay.
I'll entertain a motion to pick up the rules. Trustee Harris, seconded by Trustee Atwood. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Real quickly, before we continue, Attorney Gast, is this a legal use of PDD?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, I will accept a motion on this item. Trustee Genrich.
I would move to approve.
Thank you. Seconded by Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much. Action item number 14, Alloway Buccaneers promissory note for financing on Webster Park concession building construction. Do I have a motion on this item?
I'd move to approve.
Thank you. Seconded by Trustee Harris. Would we like to hear? Mr. Clark would like to share some information.
Just wanted to make a note, have spoken with the Alloway Buccaneers. They just wanted to adjust the payment schedule slightly. They don't want to accept the money until about August, till the project's almost completed, which would put the first payment at the end of the year, as opposed to the first payment being at the end of this month. So we'll redo the payment schedule to, you know, adjust that to accommodate for that, just so you're aware.
Okay. Is that amendment okay?
We have a motion and a second to approve. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. I did have one question. When are they going to... So they are going to build it. We're going to loan them the money.
Correct.
They're going to pay us back, and they are going to donate the property back to the village.
Correct.
When are they going to donate the property back to the village?
Upon completion of construction, which will be in August.
Okay.
Fingers crossed.
That is, for those in the audience, this is an excellent example of a public-private partnership and a great organization helping the village in which it participates. So we're very thankful for that. Action item number 15, Feminine Project Walk on June 16th. There is a request for a permit to hold a walk to raise money for personal hygiene products for individuals in homeless shelters. The location of the event is the Resch Family East River Trail from Riverview Park to Weesey Park on June 16th from 9 to 11 a.m., It is not a recurring event. Well, this is the first time, right?
Correct.
No alcohol sales, no vending or concessions. They are basically asking for approval to hold a fundraising walk on the Resch Family Trail, and they are expecting, I thought I saw, 50 people or 100 people?
Correct.
So do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Green.
Move to approve.
Thank you. Seconded by Trustee Dart. Any discussion? Trustee Harris.
I would just ask that we confirm with the applicant that there would be no permanent markings placed on the trail.
You're reading my mind?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Do we know how much money they want to raise?
At this time, no. We do not.
Do we know how they're raising money? Are they doing sponsorships, or if people want to get involved and help, how would they do that?
Correct. They can go to the, I saw it on here. I thought there was a website. I could be mistaken.
Okay. Well, if we find out, we could throw it up on the website.
Yeah.
People might
want to
help.
On our website.
Okay, great. Thank you. Excuse me. We have a motion and a second to approve. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Action item number 16, Pooches and Pints special event on August 2nd, 2018 at Green Isle Park. Mr. Clark, fill us in.
Yes, this is an event that our department has been discussing for the last month or so, looking to try to bring a new event to the community. We've started working with several partners and looking to hold an event at Green Isle Park that would include to bring your dog, your pet in. We would have live music, a band, cover band, and food trucks, and serve beer and beverages. So kind of like a summer kind of event that would include, be more pet friendly. And this is the initial year, our first try at it. So we've been working with Trevor on this as well. And right now, partners that we've worked with that have agreed to come on board, the Moskowski Family Dog Park, they're going to use volunteers to come in and help run the event. Lucky 7 Dog Rescue has agreed to pull the picnic license and be the beer sellers as far as the vending portion of that, working with Dean Distributing, and I believe we have another partner with that, potentially, or a sponsor?
Oh, yes,
Alway Animal Hospital has agreed, I believe they've donated $1,000 towards this to offset our costs. So What we're looking at is an event that would be on Thursday evening, August 2nd, at Green Isle Park, from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. Music would be approximately 6 to 8. The event would be done by 8 o'clock before it got dark, so everything would be cleaned up, and everyone would be out prior to 9 o'clock. And hoping that this kind of takes on, takes hold, I should say, and can become an annual event for us here.
Speaking of cleanup, who does the cleanup?
Well, that's why we have looked for partners such as the individuals that are from the Mazikowski Family Dog Park to assist us with those type of things. We're also looking to install a small temporary fence area, kind of an off-leash dog area, where people can go in, take their dogs off leash, and let them run. It won't be a large area, but not large enough that they can maybe socialize, that the dogs can socialize with other dogs, in that setting. So.
Yeah, a barrier to it. Do we allow unleashed dogs in Green Isle Park?
I'm sorry.
What? Do we allow unleashed dogs in Green Isle
Park? We do not allow dogs off leash in Green Isle Park. We allow them on leash. But in this area, that would be part of the event that we're looking to do, and it would be in a fenced area. A couple of the things that we were looking at from the perspective of the department is, just looking at holding an event, something new for the community to get involved with and have something to do in the summertime on a summer evening. Also wanted to utilize this as a way to educate pet owners. We kind of have a captive audience, per se, at this location. We would be able to share information with them with regards to proper pet etiquette in our parks, in the village in itself, leash laws. We would also, give them or check the dogs to see if they're licensed. Not looking to hand out, that they're in violation or anything, but to educate them that they need to license their pets annually. So that would be another opportunity. With regards to the beer and beverage sales, we would have our Brown County deputies on staff that would be able to check IDs and then hand out wristbands to those individuals and make it easier for the beer sales, for those individuals that volunteer for the beer sales. So they would also be on hand to sell some of their goods that they do for fundraising for their canine department. So any questions with regards to that?
Any other questions? I'm assuming our insurance covers the liability?
Correct.
Okay. We are being asked to approve an application for a new event for a vendor permit, a noise variance, and waive fees. And if everyone's okay with taking them all as one?
Take them all as one.
Okay.
I make a motion to accept it as one.
Okay. Did we have a motion?
No.
Okay. So Trustee Atwood made a motion to approve all of the requests. Do I have a second? Trustee Sampson. Any other discussion?
Creative idea.
Very creative.
I like it.
I think it's a great idea. So, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. We look forward to seeing you Thursday, August 2nd at 3 p.m. Green Isle Park. Action item number 17, action regarding temporary housing for homeless people at St. Matthew's Church and Resurrection Church. Kevin, or whoever. Brad.
I'll start out. The reason we brought this to the board is simply to inform the board that a homeless shelter did take place at Resurrection Parish. I believe the days were May 13th through the 27th. And there is the potential or plans for one to take place at St. Matthew's sometime either July or August, looking at a 2 week extent as well. How, the other reason we're bringing this forward is, one, we didn't know that it was taking place. And how we came to learn about it is on August with the party, May 18th and 19th, there was calls to Resurrection Parish for either emergency or
medical issues.
And when the fire department responded, they then reached out to us on the 21st and informed us that there was this taking place. It's a good thing. It's a really a good thing. And certainly what our concern was is we didn't know that it was taking place. And so we look at it more of a life safety aspect. Being notified, being able to share that information with Brown County Sheriff's Department as well as the Greenview Fire Department in the event there is an emergency. Hope that it's never a fire, but at least there was one have the ability to know how many people are in the facility, because typically that's something you don't think of anyone being in the church throughout the night. So that's where we were coming from, is more of a informational aspect, communication. Kevin, I believe Trevor, and the fire department will be meeting next Wednesday with the MICA group. Am I saying that correctly?
The MICA Center,
group
and COTS program.
COTS program to have further discussion about the next one that will be held at St. Matt's. So, with that, I'll turn it over to Kevin if there's any additional information.
I don't know, I guess if you guys have any questions, like Brad was saying, this is more of an informational to let you guys know, to let the public know that this had occurred. We were unaware of it, and now that we are in light of it, we're bringing it to your attention. So,
and I know we have someone who wants to speak. Do we have someone from the MICA Center tonight?
Yes.
Okay. Trustee Harris.
I just wondered, throughout that time period in May, do we know approximately how many people were staying in GV?
According to the fire marshal's office, the battalion that showed up on site said there was roughly 30 people.
Thank you.
And they have housing capabilities?
To our knowledge, no.
Okay.
There's a couple of issues to be looked at. I know staff's been pretty diligent in visiting with them, like I said, on the fire department. I mean, there's definitely fire and safety. I mean, these churches weren't meant for temporary, residential usage. But they're zoned Class A residential, so it's a zoning issue on one hand. And it's also a fire safety-type issue. So it's informational only at this point. There's going to be further discussions to see and to present back to the board what options might exist to permit this type of usage in the churches, because it's generally a good idea. That's a policy decision for the board. But we would have to look at zoning. We would have to look at these places aren't equipped for temporary assembly. They are for church services or school purposes, but not really for overnight usage. So we have to look at zoning issues, we have to look at fire safety issues, and just make sure that everybody's playing by the same playbook. Should the board wish to adopt some kind of ordinance or temporary use type permit that could be facilitated, but we'll definitely have to get a handle on fire and safety issues, which may require sprinklers or things of that sort. It's just in the exploratory phase now. We're all trying to gather more information to see what can be done, and then present the board back with options in terms of zoning and fire safety type issues. If the board wants to consider facilitating this type of usage of the churches within the village of Allen. So information gathering at this point, so we'll be looking into it, like I said, from the zoning and the fire safety standpoints, and present more information to the board in consultation with MICA, and see how we can maybe resolve
these issues and allow that type of usage on a temporary basis for periodic use during the course of the year. So we'll be exploring further to see how it could conceivably happen.
Okay, thank you. Brad?
Just one further bit of information. I live 5 houses from Resurrection. I didn't even know they were there. So it was done really well. And to the best of my knowledge, we received 0 phone calls to the village hall asking questions. So from that standpoint, everything really went well. It's a matter of, again, it was that maybe that little breakdown in the communication certainly would have been very helpful.
Thank you. Trustee Dirt?
Yeah, I was just wondering, do we know how the fire issues, the safety issues, are handled in the Green Bay? Because, of course, it's not Alloway, just the Alloway churches that are doing this. It's the Green Bay churches. So they must be facing some of the same issues. And if I'm understanding the details correctly, the Micah Center did talk to Green Bay, and they were able to work through those. So is there anything different in our ordinances in Alloway that would prohibit it?
I can't really speak for Green Bay, but from my understanding is that they had spoken with Green Bay Police Department, not really the fire department. So
okay, thank you.
That's to my understanding, but I could be wrong.
Well, I think that's part of the collaboration process, you know, as we investigate. I think that's part of the collaboration process as we investigate the issue further. I mean, if Green Bay's looked at it and found a solution, we'll definitely start there and take a look at what they, or why recreate the wheel. If they found something successful that would work in the village of Alloway, we'll copy it. You know, but we have to have that conversation first to see how they dealt with it and the specifics were, and particularly how they dealt with the fire and safety type issues in a temporary use facility that's really not meant for that particular purpose for overnight residents.
This meeting that we're having next week, like Brad had said, it's Trevor, myself, the police department, the fire department, Green Bay Zoning, the Micah Center representatives. We're all coming together to come up with a great solution. To figure this out, you know, we all want to be on the same page, and we all want to work together. This is a something that needs to happen, you know. And
I've certainly appreciated the village staff's help on taking a look at that and trying to work it through with the Micah Center in the last week or so. So hopefully it can all get worked out.
Any other comments from staff? We had a request earlier to have someone speak, and I have a motion to suspend the rules. Trustee Atwood, seconded by Trustee Dart. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Come on up, sir.
Good evening, and thank you. I'm Gary Strawn. I live at 2201 Libel, just
hey,
up
Gary.
The street. Earlier in the meeting, you applauded the staff of the village. I second that. And I also say thank you to each of you for your service to our village. I didn't realize until 6 o'clock tonight that this was an issue. All of the churches in the Green Bay area have been invited to be a part of something like this for the summer months while the church downtown...
St. John the Baptist.
Thank you. Yeah. St. John the Evangelist is not able to house the homeless during the summer months when it gets quite warm. And I saw it on TV that it might be an issue. Brad was being interviewed. And I thought, I want to come and just say I applaud St. Matthew's and Ascension for their getting involved in this. Our church, which is in Green Bay, actually in Ashwaubenon area, was invited to be part of this, but we house something else that goes on in the evening hours, and so we didn't take advantage of it, to which I am sad that we didn't. But I am so glad that these two churches are able to do that. And I felt when I saw it on the news, I want to come and say thank you to St. Matthew's and to Ascension for their stepping forward and doing this. And I sure hope that this can all be worked out without any problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. And just to clarify, I believe it's St. Matt's and Resurrection.
I'm sorry, what did I say?
Ascension.
Resurrection.
That's okay, so you're close.
Thank you to Resurrection.
Thank you for staying and sharing that. We also have someone from the MICA Center. Would you like to share some thoughts with us?
All right, good evening. My name is Alexia Wood, and so I'm the executive director for both St. John's Homeless Shelter as well as the MICA Center referenced earlier. And just sitting here tonight, totally off the cuff, but I would echo the comments that were just made. But I would also just say it's so nice to be part of a community, watching a community work together on so many issues. And part of what I love about St. John's and the work that we do is the fact that we have people coming around such a tough issue wanting to work together to care for our homeless brothers and sisters, that we have community members that I don't believe I've ever met showing up just to defend the rights of the homeless in our community as well. It's just fantastic. And so the biggest reason for me being here tonight is to be available for questions, but I did just want to offer, is it cutting out? Are you?
No, you sound good.
Okay. But I did just want to offer a little bit of background information for you guys as well on what the COTS program, that summer model of care, is. And so as you may be very well aware, St. John's is a seasonal emergency shelter of last resort for individuals who do not qualify for other mainstream shelter programs or have any other housing options. So our permit for the main shelter site allows us to be open from November 1st through April 30th every year. Within that, we have a building capacity of 84, and yet we have a very strong, deep-rooted mission that says we will never turn away guest number 85. Because as that shelter of last resort, we recognize that should we turn them away due to capacity, we would be turning them up to the streets of Green Bay with no other housing options. So instead, we have a model of care within our operational plan that's written and submitted to the police department along with our conditional use permit that allows us to utilize off-site overflow locations, churches, to house the additional overflow that may present on any given night when the shelter capacity exceeds 84. And so it's a model we are quite familiar with, and yet there was a 12-month period from May of 2016 to May of 2017 where four homeless brothers passed away in the streets of Green Bay because they could not access shelter services. So two of those died because there were no housing options for them in the month of May of 2016, and then again May 2017. The other two passed away in the winter months in February of 2017 when the shelter was open, yet they were not able to make their way to the shelter that night. They passed away before reaching our doors. And so it certainly just speaks to a significant need. When our shelter guests passed away, the fourth to pass away last May had sought refuge in a dumpster in downtown Green Bay in a thunderstorm. And in the middle of the night, that dumpster was emptied. And it was the first dumpster to be emptied of the night. So he eventually fell to what would be his death. And with that, community advocates, leaders came together to just say, what more can be done to honor these legacies? Where are we falling short that an individual in our community would seek refuge in a dumpster just to have a place to go to escape the rain and the lightning of that night? And I've shared a few times, I haven't shared it openly, but on the last day of shelter that season, April 30th, I was conducting our exit paperwork for guests as they were about to leave, knowing our doors would close for the season, and handing out satisfaction surveys that were not well received on the last day of shelter. And that same individual had turned in the form. And on the bottom of the form, he had written in chicken scratch that we as a shelter had failed him, that he was going to be on the streets and he was scared. And just 3 weeks later, the streets took his life. And so coming out of that, we said we as a shelter have a responsibility to do more. We as a community can do more for our homeless neighbors, our homeless brothers and sisters. And that's really how the COTS model was birthed. Our goal is not to expand our services and our scope beyond what we can manage, but simply to make sure that 365 days a year, every single homeless brother and sister in this community has a safe place to lay their head at night. And so we recognize it's a complex issue. We certainly recognize that community problems require community solutions. And so this COTS model, we went out to churches who can offer ministries and services within the context of their churches and parishes. And 16 churches came on board representing 7 denominations throughout the greater Green Bay area to host as COTS sites here this first summer. So we've had additional churches we've actually had to turn down because the schedule's full, which again just speaks to what a great community we live in, that we have churches rallying to make sure people have a place to call home. So COTS, the model is very simple. Our doors open at 9 p.m. It's a safe place to sleep. And at 6 a.m. they wake up, they do their chores to make sure they leave the facility better than they found it, and then they are brought to the MICA Center, which opens its doors at 7. And at the MICA Center, they take their showers, they receive breakfast, they meet with case management, receive clothing and hygiene items. So the only thing we are looking for them to do in these church facilities is have a safe place to sleep at night. It's fully staffed. It's full-time staff who are seasoned and have been staffed, who have staffed both shelter evenings at the St. John's location as well as off-site overflow locations. And it also serves as a resource for a police department, for the sheriff's department, for other individuals who may be coming across people who are sleeping on the streets in the summer, to, within the continuum of care, have a resource, have a place to bring somebody instead of simply wishing them well or having them in the back of the squad car. And so, and with that, we actually have Paul here tonight, who's with the Green Bay Police Department. But I asked him to come tonight simply as the chair of the Basic Needs Coalition, somebody who's working with the chronically homeless to try to ensure that there is a continuum of care to provide access to housing as well. So I spoke with Trevor. I spoke with various village staff. I've met a lot of great people from the Village of Alloway in the past week. But some of the specific things he had asked me to speak to was just our time at Resurrection, the nightly census data, and some of that information. And so I pulled the data from the 2 weeks we were at Resurrection, which again, the first night being Sunday, May 13th, through the morning of May 27th, so the night of the 26th. Our nightly average of guests served per night at Resurrection was 10.8, so just under 11. And then the two nights pulled into question, or questioned where paramedics were called on the scene. On the night of the, I believe it's the 18th, we had 11 people seek shelter that night, 9 men, 2 women. The following night, when they were called for another paramedic call, we had 10 people in shelter that night, 6 men, 4 women. And so we always have 2 staff, so that would have certainly put our total number at 13 and then at 12. With that, do you have any questions?
Any questions?
Transportation, how do people get to Res?
So we, depending on the location, if it is close to a local bus stop, and I'm not involved in logistics, but if it's close to a bus stop, we supply any guest who comes to the MICA Center with a bus pass to reach that location for the night. If it's not conveniently located on the bus line, then we provide a cab service to and from. So we incur all of the costs for transportation and staffing, and on those nights they would meet at the MICA Center at 8:30, and then they would be capped. There is no curfew, so they could present at any point throughout the evening, but for us to cover the cost of transportation, they'd have to come with that first load.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? The only question I have is that you continue to work with our staff and see if there's a way to work it out. I'm sure there is, but we would just like it to be safe for everyone and also to let people know all the great things that you're doing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And to your staff, it's truly, truly been a collaborative partnership here just in the past week or so. We as shelter staff are extremely grateful for Joe with the fire department, for Deputy Vogel, for the staff here with the village. And we certainly are encouraged that together we can find a solution that works for everybody. And then also gives hope to those homeless brothers and sisters and let them know that they have an entire community cheering for them and caring for them. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for what you do. Is there anyone else?
Yes.
Hi,
Deborah Lynn from 151 Hoffman Road. I just have a question. I have a friend who lives by an area where they house the shelter, where they have shelter for those in need. I'm just wondering, like from a safety point, they have people who come in as alcoholics, and it's a safety thing, and how do they contain the male and the female and keep it a safe place? And that's my only concern.
Okay. And that's something I'm sure that the staff will be working with, along with our deputy, to ensure that happens. Thank you, Deborah.
I actually think Alexa could answer that right now if we wanted to know.
Would you like to, Alexia?
Sure. Your meetings are so positive. So first of all, for any individual, both at the shelter and then at COTS as well, they have to be able to provide complete self-care to stay with us. And so again, going back to the Basic Needs Coalition and the work of Officer Van Handel, that's why that whole coalition exists. And that coalition is a network of all of the area hospitals, Brown County Mental Health, the police department, the crisis center, the shelter. And we're all working to say, what is the resource when somebody can't provide self-care? But in the shelter environment, they certainly need to be able to meet 7 different criteria. We also work very closely with the police department on background checks, communication, verifying identity, all of that information with anybody that we don't have a history with. And then in terms of the male and female population, we certainly approach that just with a lot of respect and thought. Many of our females, many of our men, but even more so of our females, have been the victims of trauma. It's certainly a risk factor for homelessness. And so depending on which church facility we're at, it may be 2 adjoining classrooms where they're in separate classrooms. Say it's a fellowship hall, it may be simply that they're on different ends of the fellowship hall, but those 2 staff that are certainly awake and present that entire time are right there in the room where the guests are sleeping, providing for the safety of everybody.
Thank you. Well, I don't think there's any action required because there's action taking place. Oh, I'm sorry. Come on up, sir.
Thank you. Paul Van Handel with Green Bay Police, Community Policing Unit, and I work the downtown east side, Green Bay. So I see a lot of the homeless that are at St. John's and also Micah Center, and I hear people say that, yes, we want to be a compassionate community, but being a compassionate community means we have to provide common sense, practical solutions to problems that are faced. So the COTS program is an off-season model, and so far we've had this happen. We've had this work at Trinity Lutheran and also right now at St. Francis Xavier Cathedral downtown. We have not had any problems. And further, it gives us in law enforcement an extra alternative. When we have somebody that is unsheltered, we deal with them, as statistics show, we deal with them when they are sheltered or even are housed, but we deal with them a lot more when they are not. So this model gives us options, and we've used it so far since it's opened. It gives somebody that is unsheltered a place to go, which means they can also stay or get connected with treatment services. We know how tough the system is to navigate for somebody who is not experiencing issues, but it's a lot more when they are. So it has been invaluable to us. We want it to continue. So that's all I have.
Thank you very much, Paul. So I don't think... Oh, Trustee Sampson.
I do have a question, and boy, I'm in support of this, and it sure is in keeping with the mission. I'm very encouraged that the village and the staff and the churches are working together. But my basic question is, do our ordinances apply? Because I follow the national news, and I'm vaguely aware it's probably more common with immigrant issues than homelessness, but there are churches that say, the local ordinances don't apply because we're a separate thing. So I just wonder if we're proceeding with the understanding that our ordinances do apply. And I know everything's going to get worked out. It seems everybody's on the same team. But if they aren't, is that settled law where all of our safety things do apply to whether they can have person one on their premises? A speculative question, probably. I know you haven't done the research, but...
You're absolutely right, I have. it's such a new issue. My general understanding is, as long as the zoning code and the ordinances are effective and implemented uniformly across the board, I mean, our ordinances can apply. And that's why we're going to work to make sure that we get the right things in place. But as long as things are applied objectively and uniformly, I don't see any problem with enforcement of our ordinances or some amendment to our ordinances. But as you indicated, this issue just came up in the last several days, so I haven't researched it at all. But that's my general understanding. As long as we're objective and uniform, we don't treat anybody different than anybody else, then we're okay.
Yeah, and I suspect some of the places where a municipality has said no, they maybe have been punitive or have gone out of their way to put up hurdles, you know, because there's a certain element that doesn't want it there for whatever reason. But I can't imagine you'll have an impasse here with everybody on the same team and wanting to work and make it happen. I mean, it's an interesting
issue. I think we are going to work cooperatively, and I'm sure we'll arrive at a sensible solution to the process. But there have been those cases, like the recent Supreme Court case with the baker. You know, there was a hostility towards religion, and of course, that's not village staff's perspective. I'm sure it's not the village board's perspective that we're going to be hostile in any way, shape, or form. But that was just the Supreme Court decision handed down just a couple of days ago. The Colorado Commission of Equal Rights was hostile to religious beliefs. And that's not our intention, and that's not role of the law, and that's not anything we're thinking about. So, we want to work cooperatively to bring a sensible solution that protects everyone.
Thank you.
Okay, so there's no action required. You guys are working on it. Okay, thank you. Thank you, everyone. Moving on to action item number 18.
Did we return?
No. Could I have a motion to pick up the rules, please? Trustee Harris, seconded by Trustee Dart. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Timmy. Action item number 18, appointment to Board of Ethics. We received an application from a gentleman who has been a resident of the village of Alloway for 34 years. His name is Dr. Bill Nelson, and Dr. Nelson is offering to serve on the Ethics Committee, and he is currently an adjunct associate professor in the Division of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery at the University of Minnesota and the faculty at University of Wisconsin School of Medicine. He lectures on healthcare ethics and physician executive leadership nationally on the postgraduate level. He was a founding partner in the BayCare Clinic and served on the BayCare Health Systems. He's the president of the American Board of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery and past president of the American Association of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgeons. He's also served on the AAOMS Commission on Professional Conduct. And for that, I thank him for his offer to serve, and I would like to nominate him to serve on our Board of Ethics. Do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Dart.
Move to approve.
Thank you. Trustee Green.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Dr. Nelson. Action item number 19. We'll take items A through D if there's no opposition. The consent agenda. Do I have a motion on this item?
Move to approve.
Trustee Harris, seconded by Trustee Genrich. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Action item number 20, any future agenda items board members would like to have?
Just one. I'd like to add chapter 151-7 just to review the nuisance animals. Had a call from a resident that was chased from the sidewalk into busy traffic to avoid a dog that was unrestrained. I'd like to add some language in there that would help clarify that.
Okay. Did you work with staff to?
Yeah, I'll work with staff.
Thank you. Anything else anyone would like to see on future agenda? Hearing none, we will move on to agenda item number 21. Can I have a motion to convene into closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 19.85-1E
deliberating or negotiating the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session. Specifically, developer's agreement for 1649 South Webster Avenue, sale of 3241-3245 Riverside Drive, and sale of 1677 South Webster Avenue.
Whole session.
Okay, we have a motion. Do I have a second? Trustee Sampson.
No.
Do I have a second? Trustee Dart. Any discussion? Roll call, Trustee Harris.
Aye.
Trustee Genrich.
Aye.
Trustee Atwood.
Aye.
President Rafter. Aye. Trustee Dart.
Aye.
Trustee Green.
Aye.
Trustee Sampson.
Aye.